Our next speaker made it across the border. We talked last night. We will not bring up blueberries or cucumbers at all during our conversation here. So anyways, without any further ado, let's get this baby rolling. Jeff Wilton with Nautel.
All right, let's see. I'm going to mess Cliff up. I've got the lav on. Can you hear me now? Check one, two. I hit the button. Somebody didn't put batteries in this thing. That's all right. I'll stay up here on this one. That's fine. The cool thing about this one is I get to be first. Cliff's got too many buttons. That's where I'm at. There we go. All right. Can you hear me in the back? Last night I was up here and I said, I don't need a microphone. I've got dad voice. But the microphone will be a little easier on the throat. So the cool thing about this presentation is that they said I can do whatever I want to do. So I took 24 pictures of various things in no particular order. And we're going to look at them and talk about them and see what's wrong in this picture. So I'm having a technical day today. There we go. Aim the clicker behind you when you're clicking. So what we're talking about is when bad things happen to good equipment, or sometimes bad things happen to bad equipment, just when bad things happen. Some of it you will see will be the result of, my wife grows little tropical plants called succulents, and they say that succulents thrive on benign neglect. Transmitter sites do not thrive on benign neglect. Transmitter sites especially don't thrive on benign neglect. Now, I don't know if you can see right behind the front on the opposite side from the tower, there is a little section of the roof peeled up. Because my phone did not have the X-ray vision feature turned on, what you don't see is $180,000 worth of transmission equipment underneath that section of the roof that's peeled up with a tarp over it. Keeps it dry, not necessarily the best thing for airflow. Okay? You'll also see that the weeds and the grass are grown up a little bit. Now, this site is located in Tennessee, almost Kentucky. And they have insects there and snakes there and things that like long grass. And I know because I picked about 40 of them off me after I got out of this site. Okay. Keep things trimmed down as much as you can. I mean, I know it. In the summertime, especially if we get a wet summer, you can mow the lawn and mow the grass out there once a week, and it'll still be 6 inches high every time you look. But take the effort, and by all means, if you see the roofs peeled up, the tarp over the transmitter is not the permanent solution. Has anybody ever heard the phrase radio station temporary? Has anybody ever seen a pair of vice grips holding a feed to an AC or an AM tower that have been there long enough to be rusted in place? I don't think I put that picture in this slideshow. Okay, I'm not going to take away. We're doing an IT security panel tomorrow afternoon. Plug for that. I got a whole bunch of people a whole lot smarter than me to talk about that stuff because I just know enough to be dangerous, and our IT people will tell you that's a scary proposition. But the one thing I know is don't use the default username and password. If you hit an IoT, an Internet of Things search engine, of which there are a few out there, and I may share my favorite tomorrow, you can find, I'll pick any audio codec. Okay, we all know the big audio codecs. You pick any one of them at random, you'll find at least 1,500 of them open on the internet. Now, they may not all have default usernames and passwords, and that's cool. But if it's visible, it's a target. Because if I know it's there, I may be inclined to try and get into it. There, see? Shoot behind your shoulder. Whoops, okay, maybe I am going to mention one name. And I devoted a couple of slides to IT security as well as the panel tomorrow because this is something that historically we have not done a great job at. Okay, not just broadcast, industry in general. I mean, hospitals get malware attacks, it's all over. So it's something that we really need to focus a lot harder on. Okay, and I mean, it could be as simple as just segregating networks, whatever. Oh, look, don't use the default username and password. So if I do one of my monthly IT searches and I find a Nautel transmitter, the very first thing I'm going to do is try to log into it with Nautel and default password, which is no password. I don't mind telling you this because anybody can go to our website, download the manual, and find the default username and password. Okay? That's how that barracks unit on the previous page, that's how I got into that. Okay, Comrex, all of us, a lot of manuals are available online. So pay attention to that. All right. Most of you, how many people have been here before? I should change that. How many people, this is the first time they've been here? Well, welcome and congratulations. Good to see you. I hope you'll come back. Anybody who's seen my lightning protection and grounding presentation, of which I do several, has probably seen that picture on the left. Okay, station owner did the install, little 1 kilowatt transmitter. Wire going off to the right-hand side is going to the little 1 kilowatt transmitter. An engineer friend told me, yeah, you can ground to any cold water pipe. So he did. PVC is not a great conductor. Picture on the right is another station owner. This is a site in Arkansas. By the way, as I go through this, if you see a picture that you're familiar with, you can jump up and down and go, oh, that's me, but I'm not going to mention any names, so that's totally up to you. Okay, so the one on the right is a owner in Arkansas, and he's currently brazing a ground connection. Has anybody ever heard me say how much I hate compression-type ground connections? I really dislike compression-type ground connections because if you've got a stranded wire into a compression fitting, copper being malleable, it will deform to displace air in that fitting unless you manage to squeeze it all out, which you're not going to do with a wrench and a bolt, and eventually it'll get loose. So you need to, on a fairly regular basis, go through and tighten the hardware. Now, after the first couple of years, it's probably not going to compress a whole lot more. But especially for the first year or two, it should be every 2 to 3 months, go through and tighten the hardware. Or you could get on Amazon, buy a CAD weld mold, and make it a permanent connection. CAD welding, you get to blow stuff up on purpose. I mean, what's not to love about that? Okay, this is Missouri. There is a ground rod there. You can barely see it. It's at the end of those two wires coming out. This ground rod is 2 feet long, and it's at a 60-degree angle. And the far end did not quite penetrate the soil. It got through the gravel. So it wasn't the best ground. Okay, in this particular situation, we ended up, I didn't do any of the work. I just walked in and pointed and said, fix that. The advantage of being a sales guy is you don't have to do any of the work anymore. So the tower had a strap coming off it, and it went into the building and went to the transmitter and went to the surge protector and went to what looked like a ground rod in the building. Ground rod in the building was a piece of the J-bolt holding the building to the concrete pads, the slab, thank you. And there was no ground rods outside, except for this one. And so there were losing a lot of switching supplies, and it happens. I mean, we get in a rush to do stuff. We're under a lot of pressure. In a lot of cases, you're working with a site that already had something there, and somebody else is grounding, and you don't know what you've got, and you had to lay something in on top of it. It's a challenge. Sometimes it's easier to rip it all out and start over again. Sometimes that's not possible. Okay, so it's just one of the things that you need to keep an eye out for, these little surprises. Okay? We're in Missouri again. So the power company, in a lot of states, in their infinite wisdom, will sometimes clear a stuck switch by firing a pulse down the line. And apparently they're supposed to drop the load from the line, and I don't understand how power companies work, but apparently they don't always drop the load from the line. And so they sent a 2,000-volt spike down the line, and this was an Armstrong transmitter that happened to still be connected. No fault at all of the transmitter. Might have helped if they'd had some surge protection in the site. Might not have, don't know. Because they didn't, we'll never know the answer. So anyway, that's what happens when 2,000 volts hits the primary of a transformer rated for 240 volts in this case, and the transformer caught fire. And that's the insurance company's evidence tag. Over on the left of my left. Alex, you should recognize this picture. Okay, I said I wasn't going to name names. Alex is an exception. Alex didn't install, and he very proudly sent me the picture after, and he goes, look at this. And of course, as anybody's heard me talk, what was the first question I asked him? Where are the ferrites? And what did you do with the grounding? And why? So what we ended up doing, we put the ferrite toroids on. And I, again, remember, when I say we, I'm speaking in the royal sense. Alex did all the work. I just sat there on Facebook and griped about it. I'm a keyboard warrior at heart. But so we fixed the grounding. Get that ground loop out of there and just make the ground strap. So the general rule of thumb, and this goes back to a million years ago or less, ground high, cable high, cable low, ground low. If your AC and cabling comes in low, you run your ground strap low. Okay? Cabling goes high, run the ground strap high. In the transmitter, in our transmitters anyway, I'm here to tell you that the RF output connector is the primary ground point. You see that nice little stud on the bottom? Well, you look inside, you'll see that goes with two wires right up to that output connector. So you're going to end up at the same place. Okay, so yeah, keep things as short, as straight as possible. Avoid unnecessary loops, although it does look kind of cool. And make sure you put the ferrites on the coax so I don't abuse you. Now, Alex did do an install not too long ago, and he did text me a picture because the picture he put on Facebook didn't show the ferrites. He made it a point to text me one showing that they were actually installed. So lesson learned. See, it works. This one kind of speaks for itself. You don't really need me to talk about this one much. I have to say I'm embarrassed. This came in back in my tech support days. We troubleshot these intermittent SWR. They only were having the SWR alarms when they first turned the station on in the morning. And it would blurp, 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 blurp. And they weren't sure what was going on. And they called us. And so it's like, well, what's your antenna system look like? Oh, it's fine. Okay. So we're troubleshooting the transmitter for 3 days off and on. We're troubleshooting the transmitter. So we finally get a dummy load, and of course it works great into the dummy load. Well, it works great after about 8 a.m. once the dew burns off all the brush that's going across the base insulator. So this is way back in the day, about 2 weeks after the last call. Of course, and the way service calls work, you get a call, you give them some ideas, and then you'll either get another call, which means you didn't fix the problem, or you'll never hear from them again until the next problem. So the phone stopped ringing, and it's like, okay, cool, well, problem solved. 2 weeks later, I get an envelope in the mail, I open it, and two Polaroids fall out. And that was the whole explanation. There was no letter, there was no... just a business card with a call sign on it. And it's like, okay, I understand. So I was right with the first question, what's your antenna look like? My problem was I didn't investigate just a little bit further. On the subject of antenna systems, it's a really good idea to clean up the stuff you're not using. Or you could just stack new stuff on top of it. Whatever floats your boat, I guess. Now, on the plus side, they do have a fence. I was at a site in Arkansas a couple of weeks ago. They had a fence too. Well, they had a gate. There was no fence. But they had a gate. It was. I'm sure nobody knew where the key was to it either. Okay, comes back to housekeeping, trimming around the edges. I mean, again, we get in a hurry. We have an ATU failure. You get a new ATU. You're in a hurry. Get it in. Get back on the air. Sometimes it's faster to just clean up as you go and take the old stuff out in the process. I can't tell you how long this had been like this before I wandered along, but I'm going to guess more than a couple of days, or weeks, or months. Like I said earlier, it's like the vice grips holding the feed onto the AM tower so long that they've rusted solid. Of course, at that point, they're pretty well bonded on there. Okay, if I remember right, we're in Tennessee again. And this one, not a big issue. This one was a working site. The only challenge we had didn't relate to this. It related to the primary ground coming down the power pole, not being connected to a ground rod, but ending about 2 inches under the sod. And so the power company ground was not what we would call pristine or functional. Okay, but in the process, I use this picture as just a reminder that sometimes it's a good idea to clean things up a little. You're going to see one more about this, and I'm not 100% sure the culprit for the next one may be in the room. I don't remember. Not the next picture, but down the road a little, I'll get to it. So again, when you put a wire in to replace an existing wire, take the existing wire out. Okay, it's so much easier if you clean up as you go. And in the long run, it takes a lot less time, and I guarantee the next person who comes along and doesn't have to find 120 volts on that piece of four-conductor telephone wire will thank you. How many people have a pair of side cutters with the 120-volt divot cut into them? One, two, three, four. Yeah, oh yeah, no, you buy a brand new pair of XLHs and the first piece of wire you cut, there's the hole. When you've caught a lightning strike big enough to blow a hole in your conduit, that's a hint that we need to look at the grounding. Okay? And that's what happened in this case. Now, fortunately, I didn't have any of my gear there at the time. I think my gear came after. And a lot of these stuff, like I say, this one, by the time I came in, this had all been fixed up. The conduit was still there, I guess, as a reminder, if not anything else, but it made for a great picture. How often do you get to see a conduit with a hole blown in it? customer said, ground the surge protector. Now, what you can't see, and I'm not sure why that photograph didn't make it in, it was in my original. There's a picture of a chunk of hardline with two ferrites that have cloth tape holding them to the side of the transmission line. So they're not around it. He said, you said put the ferrites on the transmission line? Now the culprit for this one is right there. Mr. Tanum has a unique and lovely sense of humor, and he occasionally likes to torture his transmitter guy with pictures like this. And it's good because I know his level of skill, so I know that this is, I hope, just a joke. On a slightly more serious note, how many people have a thermal imaging camera of some sort? Quite a few. So you can get them now for a couple of $100. They're really surprisingly inexpensive. The one I have is made by a company called FLIR, who are one of the original infrared camera companies. And it plugs into the USB port on my Android. You can get them for iPhones too. So it turns my phone camera into a full thermal imaging camera. That's what the picture on the left is. Remember what I said about my affinity, how much I love compression connections and electrical and grounding? Well, when you think about it, when you're running heavy gauge electrical wire, like for a transmitter feed or sometimes tower lighting, you're running stranded wire into a compression connection on a circuit breaker. And if you don't check them or tighten them on a fairly regular basis, they can work loose. When they work loose, bad things can happen. Expensive bad things. Okay, so by all means, do a temperature check on the breaker panels. It could be something as simple as with the cover on the panel and everything in place, just running your hand down the side of the breakers to make sure you don't have any warm spots. Okay, that's the cheap and dirty way to do it, and it will work. If you got one that's really, really hot, like this one in this picture was pushing 90-odd degrees, I'm pretty sure you would have felt that if the ambient temperature's in the 70s. Okay, so by all means, run through your circuit breakers on occasion. How many people do scheduled maintenance visits to their sites? How many people just go there when the alarms come on and the fires are lit? I saw that, Harnack. Don't forget I got your charge cable in my laptop case still. Okay, so by all means, if you can do a scheduled visit, this is one of the things that you can make part of the schedule. If you've got an infrared camera, walk in, take a picture, takes less than 5 minutes, and you can immediately see if you got a hot spot on any breaker panel. Look at the coax. You can check all kinds of stuff. You get home a little too late at night, you use it to check your wife's temperature. I wouldn't recommend that. If it shows up white, you're way too late. One more time. Have I mentioned what I think about compression connections for stranded wire? This is an electrical connection in a transmitter, and it got a little loose and it melted some wire. No fire, caught it early enough. I believe in this case it had worked loose and contributed to an operational issue, is that correct? Another one of Alex's transmitters, see, so I can ask him the question. It's always good to have one guinea pig. He's the guy that tests everything, because Alex can break stuff. Moving away from electrical connections to air handling. So one of the biggest things I have, I walk into a lot of sites, and I'll see a lot of sites that are nicely air conditioned, or using forced air, either or, and they're moving a lot of air, and they're blowing it right past whatever it is needs to be cooled. it's kind of counterproductive. If you're using forced air, send the air through the equipment, not around the equipment. It's amazing, amazing how much faster or how much better electronics survive if they're not running at 90 plus degrees Fahrenheit. See, I'm bilingual. I speak English and American. I was going to say 30 degrees Celsius. So, and this is true of anything. I don't care if you've got air-cooled, liquid-cooled, whatever, there's controllers in there. You still need to keep them. For every 10 degrees Celsius, 18 degrees Fahrenheit, you drop the ambient temperature, you'll increase the lifespan noticeably. Has anybody running HD radio had an exporter get more than about 90 degrees? One of the first generation ones? Those ones didn't like warm rooms. Has anybody ever had a computer motherboard with the little electrolytics go all puffy? Those things don't like warm rooms either. Okay, that's not to mention the counterfeits, which is an obvious different problem that we've got no control over. But definitely electrolytics and fans are two things that survive a whole lot better at cooler temperatures. And electrolytics especially are one of those things that are used in a lot of stuff. So this one was sent to me by a friend who came in and I think they had some failures. I see the hand waving. And he got called in to do damage control after the fact. So I don't blame him for the maintenance. But they were saving money by not replacing air filters. Which is fine, except as you crud up the air filters, the back pressure increases, the fan life decreases. Not to mention the things that you're actually supposed to be cooling with those fans. Okay? So yeah, swapping out the air filters. The analogy I use, and a lot of times we get the argument that the GM doesn't want to spend any money. The analogy I like to use is the car. Most GMs, most, not all, will take their car in for an oil change on a fairly regular basis. And we'll get the air filter checked on a fairly regular basis. The thing that makes the money to pay for the car probably should have the air filter checked on a fairly regular basis. Or whatever, there's always going to be some maintenance. Because dirty electronics don't live as long. This is a shot from a power amplifier that came in for repair. We took one look at it, we took it out back, and we hosed it down and then dried it off. Because nobody was touching it. I will get stuff in for repair that makes that look absolutely pristine. We've had stuff come in that you couldn't even see the head of the screws for the mouse paste. This is my politically correct term, mouse paste. Okay, so by all means, try to keep that stuff as clean as you possibly can. Oh, this is one of my favorites. Anybody ever hear me do a safety presentation? If I walk into your site and your electrical panel looks like that, we're going to have words. Now, if I walk into your site and your electrical panel looks like that, and there is loose Schedule 90 conduit laying on the floor, we're going to have more words. Okay? The argument in that case was, I'm the only guy that ever comes to this site. And it's like, well, that's wonderful. I'm sure your next of kin will appreciate that. But by all means, again, tidy things up as you go. Okay, when you wire something in, clean it up after. It's not just the pride in doing the good work or the fact that stuff that's looked after tends to live longer. It's the fact that engineers who look after stuff tend to live longer. Okay, Mark's been here long enough to retire from this industry, and he's still here. Hi, Mark. I have too much fun walking into transmitter sites. I'm going to be restricted now. Everybody's going to say, wait, you can't come visit until I get things cleaned up. So this is an AM facility with two FMs on isocouplers, which you cannot see. But the isocouplers are visible in this picture. Well, they would be if it wasn't for all the green stuff that isn't an isocoupler. How easy do you think it would be to get in there to take a base current measurement? I'm standing in front of the gate, by the way. Okay? Clean things up. If for no other reason than in a couple of months or years when I get older and crankier, I'll start naming names. By the same token, Wyze cams, and I love doing the little Wyze cams. I'm sure they're sending everything that they see back to somewhere overseas on a regular basis. Don't care, irrelevant. They're a cool thing, and they work great. Apparently, they work at sub-zero temperatures or sub-freezing temperatures really, really well. On that token, if you're not doing regular maintenance checks, you probably don't know that your transmitter site door has been open for at least one big snowstorm. There you go, one big manufactured snowstorm. So we already know who to blame for this one, too. By the same token, when the factory guy comes by to take a look at your transmitter and sees a 220-volt circuit laying in a puddle on the floor because the air conditioner condensate is leaking into the building and not out of the building, you're going to end up in a slideshow. Okay, now this guy had just bought this station in his defense. And so he brought me in to take a look at the transmitter. We walk in, there's a 50,000 watt AM transmitter sitting in the middle of a puddle. And I looked at him, smiled sweetly, and said, I'm not touching that. You don't pay me enough to work on stuff like this. Mainly because I'm not getting paid anything to work on stuff like this. So yeah, he did put in a new air conditioner because it was an actual air conditioner problem. They solved the problem. It's much drier there now. But it's the kind of things you walk into, and if you're doing regular checks, you can find them before they become a much bigger problem. Yeah. Sorry, Bob. So again, cable management is a useful skill. Okay, as much as we can, clean things up. There's two reasons. I mean, number one, well, okay, it's not the prettiest, whatever. But, and this one to a lesser extent, I saw a cell tower one day with an entire wall of cables about 4 feet away from the tower. They'd blown loose, clips had come off or whatever. They probably used the white tie wraps instead of the black ones. But, it's a huge wind load issue. Okay, I mean, if you've got 20 or 30 coaxes 3 or 4 feet from the tower and a good wind blows through, you've got a sail. Not S-A-L-E. The kind they put on boats. Oh, this next one. This is a really special one. So I've been to this site. I was at this next site once about 3 years ago, and then I came back to it again about 3 months ago, I think. It was August, might have been August or July, something like that. Oops, that's not the one. Okay, well, that one will work too. Maintenance visits, they're a good thing. If I recall right, this one was actually on the air. Up there, see? Again, we know the culprit. You also see the sources, most of my good pictures. This one. Okay, how many people can tell me? So the picture on the left is looking down at the floor behind the system or beside it. I don't know if you can see the little lights on the overhead, but there are two power bars in that pile of wires, just waiting to be kicked off. The right-hand picture is my favorite. That's looking at the side of the rack. Does anybody care to tell me how many radio stations are represented in that rack? Four. So at the top, we've got a Quest 1 standby transmitter. Underneath that, we've got one of our 2.5 kilowatts running FM plus HD. Underneath that, we have the HD equipment. Underneath that, we have three 300-watt transmitters running the analog translators for the HD signals. Four in one pile. The problem is that, number one, the 300s kept tripping because of temperature. And number two, the 2.5 kept losing power amplifiers. Well, the other thing that you can't see, and I wish I'd taken a picture, was that the solution to clogged air filters was to grab the half-inch furnace media, that blue fibery furnace media, and jam it on the front over top of the clogged air filter. Looked much better. Didn't move a lot of air, but it looked much better. Again, I asked the engineer about it, and he goes, oh, it works fine. It's like, if it works fine, why is the owner on Facebook griping about how often our transmitter's failing? How often my transmitter's failing? One of our local car dealers likes to do a Halloween display, and given that we're getting on close, they've started their display already. The point of the picture is that, yes, it does take a little bit of time and a little bit of effort, more to do things in a tidy fashion and do them properly sometimes than it does to just slam them in. But I can guarantee you, if you bury the bodies really deep, there's less chance of them surfacing in one of these presentations. All right, we've got all kinds of things that you can look at too. That's mandatory sales plug because I got to get one in there somewhere. But the Waves newsletter, I like it because I get to write a little tips and tricks article, which is typically me rambling on about stuff like this without an audience to sit there and look bored, so I can go even worse. All right. We've also got a YouTube channel with helpful little webinars, tips, tricks, and assorted other things, some of which are annoying, some of which are not, but you're the guy running the webinar or the YouTube, so you get to choose. We've been around for 50 years. It's been awesome. Has anybody got any questions, comments, criticisms, or concerns? We've got 6 minutes and 50 seconds left, and I'd hate not to run it right up to the wire. No war stories or anything? I have been around for over half of those 50 years. It will be, let's see, today's the 15th. My 29th anniversary was last Monday. So, getting there. Up in front. Get him a microphone. Greg, get him a microphone. Come on, Greg, jog.
Sorry. Hello?
There you go.
I worked at a cable TV company, and I was the supervisor of the installers, and so I've seen things like cable TV installations grounded to gas pipes.
Nice.
And to fence posts. So.
Mm-hmm. And I don't have any pictures of that, but I did see one once where they had grounded, I don't know why, but they grounded their nitrogen tank by wrapping a length of wire several times around the valve. And I'm thinking, that can't be good. It's not something I'd recommend. Anybody else got a horror story? Scariest thing you saw that you can tell without identifying yourself? Oh, Mr. Tarr. And then another one. Oh, looks like, yes, in the back.
One of the stations I took over, I went behind the rack to go wire in a new remote control, and there was a plexiglass panel, and written on it was 120 volts behind this panel, and it was in the rack, bare, on the remote control.
Nice. At least they labeled it and it gave you a little warning, because...
I actually saved that panel and have it hanging on my wall.
Nice.
As a souvenir.
Yeah, because like I said, with the side cutters with the 120-volt divot in them, you don't always get the warning. So at least they told you. Yeah.
Jeff.
Working?
Yeehaw.
Yes. Okay. While the camera is nice, it's still more money than some stations are willing to pay. However, you can find the non-contact thermometers well under $50, and it won't give you a pretty picture, but you can certainly tell when a breaker's hot in a panel with
right.
a non-contact thermometer. It's also useful to know if your tea's hot enough.
Yeah, so there's a good point. If you don't have the budget for $200 or $300 for an infrared camera, you can get a non-contact thermometer like the Fluke little temperature guns. Some of them have laser pointers even. One caution to those, the non-contact thermometers do not work well at all, and either do infrared cameras, as far as that goes, on reflective surface. So what your best bet is, take a non-reflective material and put it over top. I'm Canadian, I like hockey tape. It's black cloth tape, non-reflective. You can put it everywhere, that stuff will stick forever. So you set up your reference points and there you go. Just slap hockey tape on everything you want to be able to measure. Anything else? Oh, is that Rich? That is Rich. My eyes are getting bad as I get older. It's hard to see back there.
So your rigs are so dependable. You need to put a check engine light on it to get people to go and look, because it just, you know, runs and runs and runs. But the other thing, did you fix the undocumented feature of the temperature not being able to run below 0 degrees Celsius? We got a rig that was giving a high temperature alarm when in fact what had happened, the software was flipping to the high side past 0 degrees Celsius.
I think it's closer to, was it -5, -10? Alex, you had that problem where we ran down below a certain point and then went to 30 some odd thousand degrees. What was the low? It was 0C, okay. Yeah, so they didn't allow for negative numbers. So it went to the top of the counter, which was, you know, basically surface of the sun. I don't know if they fixed that, because we only expect them to run from 0 to 50. So if you get outside that range, you're on your own anyway. But no, it is something that has been brought up. So I don't know if it's been fixed or not, but it'd be surprising if it hasn't. You could always test it on one run of new software. Put it on Facebook. It's more entertaining that way. Folks, it's been fun. I hope we perked it up a little bit anyway, and thank you very, very much.